Love Conquers War. Written by Barbara Cartland. Narrated by Anthony Wren. Chapter 1, 1818. Rayner put her horse away in the stable, patting him because he had carried her so well. Then she walked into the house. It was a most attractive house, with a profusion of flowers in the large garden that seemed almost blinding. As Rayner Locke neared the front door, she saw that a huge bowl of roses had been added to the table. They were certainly beautiful, and she smiled as she thought that Nanny, who still lived with her, enjoyed the flowers as much as she did. She insisted on their being in every room in the house, whether they were using it or not. She walked to the front door of the kitchen, opened it, and called out, "Emily, I'm back." The cook, who had been with the vicar for nearly 30 years, came out of the pantry. "I'll have your luncheon ready for you, Miss Rayner, in 2 minutes," she began. "I'd be sure you'd be punctual, and I've been wanting to give you the news." "What news?" Rayner asked. She was wondering, as she spoke, whether it was a new baby who had been born in the village, or else perhaps someone was near to death. Her father, when he was alive, always insisted on being told the moment anything new happened locally, and since he was no longer here, Rayner had taken it on herself to visit the person afflicted. "You'll never believe it," Emily continued, coming further out of the pantry, "but his lordship's arrived at the hall." Rayner stared at her. "Are you saying that the Earl is back, Emily?" "It's the truth. The postman told me that he'd called with a letter he'd had for Mr. Munn, the secretary, and when he delivered it, he tell him his lordship arrived last night." "I cannot believe it's true," Rayner exclaimed. It was many years since the Earl of Monthurst had been in residence at the Hall, and the whole village was, of course, part of his extensive estate. He had been a soldier during the war. When the Duke of Wellington had won the Battle of Waterloo, he had stayed on in France with the army of occupation. Since that too had come to an end, they had been expecting he would return home, but not in such a sudden and unexpected manner. "They must have been in a flutter up at the Hall," Rayner remarked to Emily. "Oh, that be true, miss. And the postman says they'll be practically standing on their heads rather than their heels, which will not be surprising as he's been away so long." "He surely has, and I look forward to seeing him." "Well, you won't be the only person doing that," Emily smiled, as she went back to lift a saucepan off the stove. Rayner walked back into the hall, and taking off the coat she had worn out riding, she walked into the dining room to wait for her luncheon. It seemed incredible that after being away for 5 or 6 years, the Earl should have come back, apparently without notifying anyone of his intention, not until he was actually in his home. They had been expecting him for so long that now he had appeared, it seemed almost unbelievable, and Rayner wondered just how soon she would be able to get in touch with him. Her father had died last year, and there had been no other vicar appointed to the village. They had a service only every fortnight when the parson from a neighbouring village came to take morning or evening prayer. "He will have to wait," Rayner was told when she had made inquiries, "until the Earl returns. The church is on his estate and he pays the vicar's stipend." The same thing was said about everything else that was needed in the village, and Rayner knew that her father had a long list of projects that needed to be undertaken. And he had hoped the Earl would consider them all favourably now the war was over, and the vicar had looked forward so much to the Earl's return. Yet now her father was not here, and Rayner thought there was only her to inform the Earl of what was urgently required. Everyone had suffered during the war, and all the able-bodied men of the right age had been in the army. Although they had been pleased and excited to go, many of them had not returned, and it had meant that there was a great shortage of hands to work on the estate. The vicar, who came from a large estate himself, had sighed as the crops were smaller and smaller each year, and the weeds grew higher and higher. The very Reverend, the Honourable Alfred Locke, was the third son of a distinguished family who came from the north of England. He had at first been granted a living on his father's estate, as was usual with several sons in the family, but he had not got on well with his elder brothers.